listening to The Bench on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 92.5.
Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's John Granato and Lance Zierlein.
All right, 8:02 here on The Bench. And it's Lance, it's Dell, it's Trey. John Granato is out today, so he'll be gone. Your Astros did not win. It's the first time in the series. They won the first three. The offense didn't do much 2 games ago, but they won 2-1 thanks to the pitching on the strength of my man Fromber. And I didn't used to say my man Fromber, but I say it now. But that was something I never thought I'd ever say. But Fromber, the best pitcher on the staff. And then you got Jake Odorizzi. And Jake Odorizzi started yesterday, only went 3 innings, gave up 4 hits, 3 runs on a 3-run homer. He had 3 walks, 2 strikeouts, was not at his best. Location wasn't great. I didn't think his stuff was all that good. There's a chance that Jake Odorizzi is just kind of a guy. I mean, so far as an Astro, he's just a guy. And if that's the case, then the Astros will have to figure out if he goes to the bullpen or remains a starter. Luis Garcia, who is the other guy that gets mentioned, is going to the bullpen. We know McCullers isn't going to the bullpen when he comes back. I mean, that's not happening. Fromber's not going. Urquidy's not going. Zach Greinke. There is no other option but Jake Odorizzi and Luis Garcia. And one of those guys is pitching really well, and one of them isn't. So it seems like an easy call, Garcia to stay as the starter and Odorizzi to get bumped to the bullpen. But the only point that I wanted to bring up was that, you know, it might also be a situation where if you got a guy who's not pitching very well in Odorizzi, is that what you want to throw in the pen? Wouldn't you rather fade one pitcher who's up and down in your starting rotation as opposed to yet another? And then you have Garcia, who's a better pitcher in the bullpen. Would you want a construct like that? It doesn't fit into the normal standards of baseball where you want your best five players starting, but this would be a very unique situation where you really feel like you don't have guys in your bullpen you can trust. Now, if Blake Taylor comes around, if Brooks Raley, you know, continues to make some inroads, if Presley settles in, if you can get one more arm somewhere, and maybe Taylor's that arm, maybe Anoli's that arm, if you get 4 bullpen pitchers that you feel like you can trust, all right, in that case, And you've got Javier to run the long innings for you. All right, in that case, I don't think there's any doubt Garcia's a starter. And the way I look at it, Garcia should be the starter. I'm just saying, I wonder if the Astros will covet, Dell, a better arm in the pen right now for long relief. When I say long relief, it's not obviously not what it used to be. Long relief means you can take 3 valuable, 4, maybe even 4 valuable innings and run a lead all the way into the 9th inning.
I think it's a very easy decision if Jake Odorizzi is capable of being in the bullpen. Like, if the Astros see they can find value in him there, I think it's easy. You just throw Luis Garcia in the rotation and be done with it. But if Odorizzi is the type who cannot do it, then that means if you're pitching Garcia, which I would still agree with you do that, but the better pitcher, the guy who's going better in the starting rotation, then you have a starting pitcher who's pretty practically worthless on your roster. So I think that's the question. I just really hope if it comes down to it, Odorizzi can do it, because I would hate to think of taking away Luis Garcia's opportunity simply because you need to find a place for Odorizzi. And you take the better pitcher out of your starting rotation simply because the other guy's not flexible enough to find a way to contribute. So I don't know if Dusty Baker's going to have that conversation, because he was just talking earlier this week about Garcia proving that he belongs in the majors. Is he going to have that conversation with Odorizzi about, well, I know you got all these pelts on the wall, you've been doing this a long time, but really, you'd be best suited giving us 3 innings when we need you, as opposed to being in the rotation every 5 days or every 4 days?
Yeah, I mean, I'd be fine with that. I love watching Garcia work 6-7 innings. I mean, that's another way that you keep your bullpen from coming in, have a guy who can go deeper. And he's shown the ability to potentially go deeper. He's worked 100 innings now. You know, Clint Shane on Twitter brought up a decent point. He said the most innings he's ever gone, at least as a major leaguer, has been like 80-some-odd innings, and he's already at a 50. So he said at some point you might want to put him in the bullpen and kind of – You know, here's what he said. Garcia hasn't ever pitched more than, he's never pitched more than 108 innings in a season. He's already at 53. He's going to the pen for at least a little while. I mean, every pitcher, though, at some point goes beyond the most innings pitched that they've had in a season. To his point, maybe he's saying he's going to need to be more valuable down the stretch. This would be a different level of analytics. If you put a guy in a bullpen that's pitching well because you're trying to limit his pitch count, but there is no issue with arm fatigue or anything like that, that would be an unusual move. I don't remember ever hearing about that.
And particularly because, in this case, Luis Garcia has gotten stronger and gone longer his last couple starts.
And he's not a guy that throws these big hook curveballs that, you know, could torque the elbow. He works fastball. He works his slider. Works behind that. I don't know. I don't think they'll just put him in the bullpen because he's going to hit the highest innings pitch mark he's ever hit. I don't know that that's a good reason for that. All right, basketball. Go ahead.
Art just tweeted us a story about what pitchers are using to manipulate baseballs. SI is doing one of their daily covers about it. And it's not so much I want to stick to that, but it is relevant to what former Red Sox Lou Maloney said about your guy Fromber.
What?
He
needs to keep Fromber's name out of his mouth unless it's positive.
It's not positive. He tweeted out yesterday in the morning, obviously after Fromber's start the night before. For watching last night's game, Valdez starts the first inning wearing a red glove. Yet in the second, he switches to a black glove. I wonder why. I mean, this is a joke. MLB, wake up and do something about it. So he's accusing Fromber of maybe using a substance on his glove or in his glove. And now we saw, I think Art tweeted us earlier as well about how Major League Baseball is now going to enforce the whole, are you manipulating the ball with this foreign substance? That apparently they're going to go all in on that. And now SI has a story about it. But Lou Maloney just randomly threw Fromber in a grease about it.
Lou Maloney is a former baseball player. He played in the bigs. I don't know for how long he played in the bigs. He played for a while.
Yeah, he was around quite a bit.
He played for a while. He's part of a radio show now. He's part of a show called In Boston, all right? He's co-host of Ordway, Maloney, and Fourier. Well, that'd be Christian Fourier, a bunch of athletes, right? A bunch of former athletes.
Who played in the Boston area.
Yeah. WEEI. And he's also a baseball analyst, NBC Sports Boston baseball analyst. He also says he's Bill Belichick's boy. Here's what Lou Maloney has said recently on Twitter. He has said this. Let's see. Well, I got to get through his hockey stuff. All right. We got, what's up with the Yankee fans, Lou? They're silent. They know their team is overrated, has no choice. Here's another one. Astros fans have to be the dumbest in baseball. That is all. Then you get him just fighting with Astros fans. A lot of them fighting with Astros fans. Then he's got this. The amount of Astros fans in my timeline butthurt is hysterical. Always the victim. I'm not just accusing your pitchers. I'm accusing most, if not all, pitchers. The league knows it. They just can't figure out what to do about it. There's more and more fights against Astros fans. And hey, you're missing the point. Everyone's doing it, including Sox pitchers. It's just that guy got rid of a red glove to go with the darker glove. So that's what got him set off.
Yeah.
And then fans jump on it. And so now, later, he talks about the fact that, oh, wait, it's all pitchers. Well, that certainly wasn't something he led with. And yeah, Red Sox pitchers are doing it. All the baseball's doing it. And they haven't cleaned it up yet. And you'll notice that they're going to pick and choose. When are they going to come down hard? You know, they don't come down hard on the very best pitchers. They're not going to. But that's something that does need to be looked at. I don't understand why fans who are cheater, Astros are cheaters, but they let the grip on a baseball that improves spin rate, that makes breaking balls break harder, that makes it harder to hit a baseball. How is that not a performance advantage worthy of note? How is it not? Especially when a pitcher, a baseball player who's on steroids may get up to the bat five times in a game. A pitcher is going to be throwing all the time. How is that not worthy of discussion? How is that not worthy of outrage from the fans? It doesn't seem to be now. It seems to be since the Astros thing. Now, here's what was weird. In 2000, I think it was 18 or 19, we were talking about, it was 18, when we saw the Red Sox had stuff going on with their, in their glove and, you know, guys going to substances on their arms. I remember being pissed off, like, what a bunch of cheaters. Now, this is before we knew anything with, about trash cans. Then we saw, and then A.J. Hinch didn't make a big deal about it. When I'm thinking, oh, my God, you need to turn him into the league. Of course, now we know why A.J. Hinch can't say that. Mm-hmm. Now we knew all the stuff that was going on. But then we saw the Astros doing that, too. Gerrit Cole's a guy who does that stuff. Justin Verlander and Cole, I think both of them got the stuff from the Angels locker room guy, right? Or was it just Cole?
I think it was Cole.
Maybe it was just Cole. But my point is, inside baseball, they don't seem to care as much about it. Outside baseball, it was a huge problem, but I think there's getting to be more issues inside of baseball where they're talking about foreign substances on the ball because it's a massive advantage. There's more swinging. There's the miss rate for hitters is at an all-time high. There's more pitchers juicing up the ball with foreign substances so that they can get better grips. I don't understand how this has not become a much, much bigger story. And it feels like people were more pissed about it in like 18, the general fan bases, and now they're off of it because the Astros got caught and they want to keep the focus on the trash can stuff, but they don't want to focus on their own players having giant chunks of goo on the back of their hat or on the front of their hat or in their glove. They don't want to talk about that. But that's happening all over the league.
And Ken Rosenthal of The Athletic tweeted last night, MLB informed owners this week of severity of issue with pitchers applying foreign substances to baseballs. Enforcement is coming, but league will follow a process involving communicating with players and umpires, unions, as well as all 30 clubs. So I imagine before they start really crushing players, they would like, hey, guys, this is your fair warning to cut it out. Because baseball doesn't want to have to announce a suspension or a fine for a pitcher from this club, a pitcher from this club. They'd rather just, hey, guys, just stop. But we know they're going to actually have to punish someone before guys will just cut it out completely. Because that's kind of how everybody works. We'll push and we'll push and we'll push until you actually come down on someone, and then we'll get the message.
Here's what a Red Sox fan yesterday said. Breaking the rules is different from cheating.
No, it's the same thing.
Yeah, cool. Cool story, Red Sox fans.
Actually the same thing.
You're actually probably the worst cheaters. If you really want to know the truth, the Red Sox are probably the worst cheaters.
Nah, we found out that nothing they did rose to the level of the Astros. That's what I was told before the story officially broke. Don't worry. Hey, look, the Red Sox, they have some things coming. But don't worry. It's nowhere near as egregious as the Astros. That's how that thing was couched from the very beginning.
Yep, always. 8:14, we get back. We'll get to your phone calls. We'll also talk about the demise of the Lakers and LeBron James.
The demise? I mean, for a season, sure.
The demise? Oh. Question mark?
All right.
It's a question that needs to be answered.
Will LeBron ever win a title again?
No.
All that and more on.
That's a real
first
question.
First take. I mean, John. How can the bench.
The question is, how can the Nets fit him under the salary cap? Because you know he's going to be making calls.
They can trade Kyrie.
Yo, can we maybe trade Kyrie?
Yeah, straight up.
8:15 here on the bench.
Answer that.
To call into the HRNP listener line, dial 713-780-ESPN. The Affordable Care Act continues to be a complex regulation, and employers must comply. Visit HRP.net for help.
The Blitz.
Now he says Burrow tore up a Bama D pretty close to the Texans D.
Honestly, right, we joke, but that Bama D, they had more NFL players than the Texans do.
Well, that LSU offense had more.
Yep.
Honestly, if you gave me that LSU offense right now over what the Texans have, with where those guys
without
are.
Without Deshaun?
Yeah, I'd take it, even with Deshaun.
Yeah, I'm with you.
With Fred Fowler and A.J. Hoffman.
Would you take last year's Alabama offense?
Probably.
Boy.
Dude, I would take that right now.
If you took a combination of the Tua championship team and the Joe Burrow championship team, you've got a team that would destroy the Texans, I think.
Well, especially at this stage of their career.
Yeah.
I mean, because you're a couple years removed.
Take those guys now and, like, pick out the best of them. I bet you'd beat the Texans. In fact, I'm almost certain you would be.
Weekdays from 4 to 7.
Well, I mean, look at how many of those guys are top 20 picks.
Yeah.
How many top 20 picks do you have on the Texans?
Texans didn't even have a top 70 pick.
On ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 92.5.
You
You're listening to The Bench on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 92.5.
Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's John Granato and Lance Zierlein.
Lance is fiddling with the microphone.
Man, this microphone is just so jacked up. The Lakers are out.
Couldn't you feel good? You feel good, huh?
I do feel good. I got to find a way to get James out of there. Not sure it's going to happen.
So we
can the Bucks beat the Nets? Don't tell me they can. It's possible. I mean, can the Bucks? Do you see a scenario where the Bucks beat the Nets?
The Bucks are going to have to try to duplicate some of the things they did with the Heat. Their size was a big deal against Miami. Their ability to keep Brooke Lopez in the game. He was a pretty influential figure. If he can do those type of things and save possessions with rebounds, or even just whether it be DeAndre Jordan or Claxton, whoever they put on him, him being on the floor may limit the Nets' ability to spread the floor, because you need to keep a big in because Brooke Lopez is running amok. That could help. He's going to need to have a big series. I mean, Chris Middleton's an underrated player. I think the Bucks have enough. I just think their size needs to come into play, because that's the one thing the Nets can't account for. DeAndre Jordan's not a dude anymore, and Claxton's a skinny big. And the Nets aren't great at – they're better than they have. They're not historically bad like they were before defensively. But the Bucks will get – can exploit them a little bit on the perimeter as far as getting open threes. Well, then that becomes the whole make or miss league thing. But I certainly think the Bucks have a shot, because their size can play a factor.
I think they could, but I mean, you're going to finally have to see. Honestly, you're going to have to see. You're going to have to see Giannis play like the best player in the league. This guy can't win MVPs without you feeling like he's the best player on the court of every series, and that's not the case. Do you feel like he's the best player in the series?
No, he doesn't.
You feel like he's the second? Honestly, I feel like he's probably the third.
He's probably the third. But I don't think Giannis, he's had so much gravity that he, much like any great player, he opens up things for others just because of the way you have to defend them. And the Nets don't have an option for him. Are they going to put Blake Griffin on him for 35 minutes a night? Doesn't seem likely. You don't want Kevin Durant guarding him that long. There's no real match for Giannis really on any team. But the Nets specifically, I don't think, are going to have a guy. So I think he'll have the ability to compromise that defense a little bit. But the problem for anyone who faces the Nets, they just have three guys who are bucket getters and can do it no matter who's guarding them. And that might just be enough to propel them to a title.
Man, the Nets have such a Kansas City Chiefs vibe where they're just going to put so many points on you. Or maybe the greatest show on turf vibe, when you knew that you were going to have a hard time just because they could score so much. I just don't know, over the course of seven games and with guys who have the ability, because Kyrie's shown the ability to get into the 30s without a problem. You have so many guys that can get buckets. If two of their big three play well in any given night, they're pretty much unbeatable by any of the NBA team, any of the teams left in the playoffs. I can't see anybody matching up with them if two of their big three play well. The question will be, does James Harden have the same impact that he can have when he's at his best? I don't know. I don't know that he gets the ball enough. He has the high assist total, and I get that, and I think that's kind of a mode that he's gotten into. Can James Harden go back to a guy who can go get you 45 in a night? Maybe you don't have to. Maybe 45 is dumb, but 35. Can James go back to that mode as long as KD is on the court? I think that's going to be the question, but ultimately, who cares? If KD is playing well, I'm not sure that the Bucks can beat them. And so that brings me to, that's one super team. The other super team that was built was the Lakers. When they got Dennis Schroeder and they added Montrezl Harrell and everybody they kept adding, we kept saying, oh my gosh, this is going to make them even better, even better, even better. And what ended up happening is they don't have great chemistry. LeBron had some really bad turnovers at different times. Once again, yesterday he was, what, 11 of 26? 11 of 23?
26.
11 of 26. I ain't going to get it done. LeBron can't carry. LeBron, can LeBron still carry a team on his back like he did in the past? Because Anthony Davis tried to play. He ended up going back out in the first quarter and never came back.
The Lakers are built, and rightfully so, and you get why it didn't work. They built around the combination of Davis and James. And if you're not going to have Anthony Davis on the floor, what you need around LeBron James is spacing. The Lakers don't have spacing. I mean, I don't know if we got to it, but I put the stat on the rundown a couple weeks ago, maybe a week ago or so ago, showing what Anthony Davis did from 2-point range and 3-point range, long twos and 3-point range in the bubble last year compared to what his normal averages are. And he was well above, like almost double his averages as far as shooting long twos and threes in the bubble. It contributed to Lakers winning that title. It wasn't the same here. The Lakers didn't have enough shooting to help LeBron if there is no Anthony Davis on the floor.
Yeah.
And you could watch it. Contavious Caldwell-Pope got it going for a little bit in the third quarter, I think, to make it a little closer. But you just look at that roster. When you don't have Anthony Davis to supplement LeBron, it's a bunch of, well-traveled dudes. Like, you mean Marcus Morris Markieff Morris is a guy you want to depend on?
No, but he's well-traveled. Montrezl Harrell is well-traveled. Montrezl Harrell is going on his own Twitter account, blasting his own team kind of subtly about wasted time, not getting back on the court, whatever. I mean, this is a guy who's had trouble everywhere he's been for some reason. And
Kyle Kuzma fell apart.
Kuzma's turned into nothing.
He had a really good regular season, and then he was a nothing in the series. Finished finished game 6, 1-for-6. He was terrible. I mean, he's the guy that they didn't want to give up when they were trading for Anthony Davis. They made the decision Hart, and then and Ingram were expendable, and Kuzma wasn't. And turns out maybe you should have found a way to keep Brandon Ingram as opposed to Kyle Kuzma if it came down to one or the other.
Yeah, it was a big mistake.
Yeah.
In hindsight, it's going to end up being a big mistake because you'll be able to build around one guy. You can't around the other. Let's get Keith in here. He wants to talk about the playoffs. What's up, Keith?
Good morning, guys. I wanted to give you the NBA playoff scenario that I would like to see. And then I'll hang up and I'd like to hear yours. So here's mine. I'd like to see the Nets meet the Suns in the finals. Now, I would like to see Chris Paul injure James Harden on a dirty play, and then I would like to hear them sniping each other in a post-game press conference. Now, I don't care who wins the series. I just want to see that. Thanks, guys.
Well, those are very specific things that he's looking for. In case you missed it, he wants Chris Paul to injure James Harden. He wants them to get into it in a press conference. Doesn't care how the game ends up.
I think James Harden gets in that dude's head. Like, I think that's one of those players that gets in that dude's
head. Who got in your head? Who's a race car driver that was
someone
in your head,
said
Trey?
Sterling Marlin
gets in your head?
They said that because he wrecked Dale Earnhardt at Daytona. But no, an athlete that really got me mad and into my head was LeSean McCoy. Not just because he, like, destroyed the Cowboys all the time, but he also spoiled Avengers Endgame for me, and I hate him.
Wait, what happened?
John did that too, by the way.
Did he really?
He didn't know. He just said Iron Man was going to die.
He did. I remember that.
And he was right.
You hadn't already seen it? Oh, John just
accidentally got it right, yeah.
He did.
But LeSean McCoy saw a premiere or something and went on Twitter?
Yeah, and he went on Twitter, and somebody I followed quote tweeted it. And I was like, oh, man, from now on, I hope Devin Singletary or whoever the Bills running back is at that point, like, takes your job and humiliates you.
Kind of happened. Well, I don't know about the humiliation, but he kind of
did take his job. Hey, what was Dale Earnhardt Jr.'s first win? What was his first major? Are they called majors?
No, they're not called majors.
What are they called? Are they majors?
No, they're just races.
Okay. Yeah, but some of them are bigger than others. What are those called?
Those are called the Crown Jewel events.
Yeah.
But is it
what race car calls it, the Crown Jewel, or is it just kind of a generic term you're calling it that fans call it?
No, that's what they call it.
Okay. So what was his first Crown Jewel?
His first 2004 Daytona 500.
Yep. That's exactly
what
I was
saying.
Say.
Yep, like you know.
That's what I was going to say. I was going to make sure he got that right. I'll never forget that.
Okay.
Me and John did a show about it.
Never forget that anyway?
Yeah, me and John. His Me and John did a win, show about that back in the day.
His first win was 2000 at Texas, but his first major is the Daytona 500 in 2004. So, yeah, but that doesn't surprise me. I know y'all were big on NASCAR back then.
Yeah, we were. We did a lot of things. We used to have somebody from like Formula One. I guess they bought early on back in the day, like 1999. Somebody from Formula One or something bought some sponsorship. So they would come on every Tuesday and we would have to do like a 6-minute interview with them. Me and John, you want to talk about...
Well, we're talking about Michael Schumacher or something?
I guess. I don't even remember. We were having to... Whoever won some race, they would give us notes, like questions we could ask. We basically never strayed from this. So tell us about, boy, what an incredible race there in Whereverville. And they would tell us, and then we were just like, oh, thank God that's done.
Well, you weren't. I don't think you were here for it, but John had to usually pre-record an interview with the Dynamo coach.
Oh, yeah.
And he was either Scottish. I think he was Scottish, so you could barely understand him. I had to be in there and record and make sure John had a couple questions he could ask. The team wasn't very good, and that guy got gone pretty quickly. But I imagine it's the same way. John interviewing a Scottish man about the Dynamo.
What would he have, if you hadn't been there to ask questions, what do you think some questions John would have asked? The first thing he would have said was something like, man, are you pumped up? The season's coming up. Yeah, yeah.
Talk about it. Season's coming up.
He doesn't. You remember his impression of John?
No, do your John impression.
So, Dynamo coming up. You pumped up about that. I'm John Granato. How about some Uberito? Have you gone to Uberito lately?
Uberito. He leaned on the Uberito stuff.
Yeah.
Beak impeccable.
I don't even know what you're talking about.
He has
about.
An impression. I don't know. It would have been a lot of, man, well.
What do you think they're going to do with center back?
No.
There's no chance he would have said center back. So you're playing Dallas this week. Go up and kick their ass because we hate Dallas.
We hate Dallas. You guys hate Dallas as much as we hate Dallas. Right. I know you're from Ireland or whatever, but we hate them here.
I'm a Scot. Oh, yeah, same thing, whatever. Same thing.
Do you think that guy's even been to Dallas
100%.
Aside from going to the game?
What?
Do you think that guy, the Scottish coach, even knows where Dallas is on a map?
Probably not before he got here.
Yeah, I doubt it.
Coach, I know you don't understand the rivalry between Dallas and Houston, but I got to tell you, Dallas sucks. We hate them. Beat those chodes. Come back here with the win.
Can you say that on the radio?
Well, you can dump it if
I can't.
You
can say chode.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I've said it lots of times.
Yeah.
Okay.
If you can say D-weed on the radio, I think you can say chode. That would have been kind of the formula for those interviews.
Yeah, I think we know what John's questions would have been. So tell me about who's this guy.
This guy,
Alon, is he's a good goal scorer. Tell us about him. Like, you just pulled some name off
of course. You know,
I see you got a brand new Brazilian. Must not be good if he's playing for you. Ain't that right, Coach?
He wouldn't say that, would he?
Well, he wouldn't say that.
He wouldn't say that. Well,
I don't think he'd say that.
Is he the next Ronaldo?
Well, no, he wouldn't know Ronaldo.
No.
Ronaldo? You think he could pull Ronaldo out of his
the
ass?
The Brazilian Ronaldo?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think he could.
No.
You don't think
he has no idea who Ronaldo is.
The Brazilian Ronaldo was part of our lives for a long time.
Mid-90s into the early 2000s. There is 0%
chance. El Fenomeno, he wouldn't know?
No, He wouldn't remember he wouldn't remember Ronaldinho. He wouldn't know Ronaldo. No. John pretty much he was all the way out on soccer until you had, who was it? It wasn't Clint Dempsey. It was, your other guy
who
scored the late goal.
Landon Donovan?
Landon Donovan scored that late goal, and we were watching here in studio, and he got all pumped up, and then we went to Nick's place. Once he gets some Coors Light while he's watching it, he associates positive things with when he's having Coors Light.
Okay.
So soccer was on, and Coors Light was in his mouth. And so he kind of got into the World Cup a little bit. And then his son really got into soccer. So I think he cares. I think he cares now. I think he can tell you some of the... Nah.
Nah, he couldn't.
He can only tell you maybe four players.
He's not watching it with the boy. It's not going to happen.
Yeah. No, it's not going
to
happen.
I remember when the station was leaning in. Because, you know, the U.S. was in the World Cup. The first game was against England. We all went to, it wasn't Nick's. What's the sandwich shop over there we used to do shows from? Jake's.
Oh, Philly Steaks, yeah.
Jake's Philly Steaks. So we had a watch party there for the station and some listeners. And I remember distinctly one person who, you know, just getting hyped because the World Cup is going on, maybe doesn't know much about it, said, "We need a power kick." And I was like, okay, I'm in the wrong place.
What's a power kick?
That's my point. What is a
power kick? Is
it a free kick? Is it a goal kick?
That sounds like something you'd do on Ty Bo.
I don't know what it was, but he didn't know the terminology.
Maybe they need to get a red. Maybe the other team needed a red card so you could get a man advantage.
No.
Maybe as a hockey fan who thought of a power play.
Well, I don't know. He had his USA either polo or jersey, and
so he had that and still said power kick.
It was the World Cup. Idiot. It's time to jump on board. He didn't know anything.
Are we going to qualify this time?
We better. I mean, they beat Honduras last night in kind of this made up Nations Cup thing. That's a very new thing. It doesn't really mean all that much. The Gold Cup is going to come up this summer, but it's a young team. It's new blood. Christian Pulisic's out, clearly the star, but a lot of young guys who played in Europe. So like we have a guy who played for Barcelona. That's cool. A guy who played for Borussia Dortmund. You know, Christian Pulisic's a Champions League final winner as well. Guy plays for Juventus, so a lot of international experience and young too. So if this goes well, this cycle, you can see these guys being a part of maybe a long term future for you might even call them the golden generation.
I watched, if things go well. It could be. I watched the Champions League, and we'll get to a break here. But I was watching Champions League final with a Danish guy named Lars, who's a big Chelsea fan. So I'm watching with him, a good friend of mine, Michael. And it was actually the bar was pretty packed out. It's a place called I think O'Connor's Pub. It's in Marquee Entertainment Center. So we're in there. Place is pretty packed out with a bunch of Man City fans. Over the last 3 years, they've become Man City fans and then Chelsea fans. And so anyway, we're having some drinks, watching it. And, you know, Lars is a huge, huge Chelsea fan his whole life. And so one of the things he was telling me about Pulisic is that he's a guy that will wear down and break down if you play him too much. And he said one of the issues is if you start him all the time, you're going to have to sub him out. But when you have a deep team, like a Premier League team or wherever he's going to be playing, even if it's in, you know, if it's in La Liga, if he plays at one of the premier teams, then he's a guy that you can bring in 65 minutes into the match and he can really go hard then. And so I said, well, is that going to be a problem for the U.S.? He goes, yeah. He said, it could be. You could see him break down. And he's saying that with his experience of him playing at Chelsea. Is that accurate that he may be a guy that you can't count on to go 90?
Well, he has suffered multiple injuries. It's mostly leg stuff that has kept him out of game. So, and he's only 22. So,
that sounds accurate then.
And he's slight. He's 5'8". Not that you have to be giant in soccer. He's not Messi, clearly, but Messi, best player in the world, maybe best player of all time. He's not a big dude, but he's a stouter dude than Pulisic. I don't know how soccer training works and does he need to put on a couple pounds of muscle to sustain himself. But injuries have been a big deal as a smaller dude. I mean, if you're trying to handle Pulisic, if you can even get near him, beating him up is probably the best way. But whether he's best suited to play, be a sub, that's not going to happen for the U.S. That dude's going to be a guy you lean on for 90 minutes.
You got to go get matches. An early goal with him. Unreasonable, illogical soccer hate, but Mexico national team goalkeeper Guillermo Ochoa is all up in my head, said Kevin.
You brought him up during the break. I can't stand El Tri. And that's where, that's the name of the Mexican national soccer team. And that's where there's a soundbite in there from someone calling me a racist son of a bitch because I told everyone, I am a U.S. soccer fan. Why would I ever like the Mexican national team?
And he called you a racist son of a bitch.
No, a woman called in and called me a racist son of a bitch. She was listening. I was like, this is sports. I don't dislike a Mexican people or even the players on a team when they're not in Mexico shirts. But when they're playing, it's like Texas not liking Oklahoma.
Sometimes
it's the same thing.
Us white guys get called racist because we don't like a player. And if that player happens to be a different race or ethnicity, we get called a racist illogically, and it's not fair. It makes us upset. I'm glad you got to spend some time in our shoes finding out what it feels like for somebody to just call you a racist based on the fact that you didn't like a team.
I've never said I hate Mexico or Mexicans.
I intimated that on the show.
No, that's a lie. I said I hated El Tri, and that's within my rights as a U.S. soccer fan. You're not supposed to like them.
No.
That's just how it is.
No. You know what John would have said to that? Go back to your own country if you like El Tree.
He wouldn't have said that. He would have just leaned in and called me a racist. That's what he would have done.
That's probably what he did, actually. Was he on the air when the lady did that? Was it Throw Shade Thursday and somebody called you a racist?
No, he might have been on the air, but he would have like, yeah, you're right. He is.
Okay, 100% he would have gone, finally, someone
sees what I've been saying all these years.
That's exactly. Even though John's not here today, we know what he's saying, so you're welcome. It's 8:39 here on the bench. We're a little late for a break.
Well, we're almost on time for the next break.
So you know what? It's not like we have a lot of live spots today. Let's just keep rolling for another 3 minutes.
And
how about that, Dale?
We'll combine the breaks together.
We'll do what we call combine so we can actually use a bathroom. 713-780-3776 if you want to come in. Hey, Nikki, who's listening, not my wife, but a different Nikki. She said, I was cracking up when you called AD street clothes. That bleep is going to stick. Here's the thing. I didn't start it. Charles Barkley started it. Can you find street clothes? Charles Barkley calling Anthony Davis street clothes. We'll play it for you. When Barkley said that, and Draymond Green, who was in studio, and Shaq and Ernie all started chuckling, I realized Charles just hit one out of the park. You know, sometimes you hear nicknames and you realize this is perfect because Anthony Davis, oft-injured Anthony Davis, had to leave the game. If Anthony Davis doesn't get hurt, do they win the series? Because the return of Chris Paul, I don't know that I remember a more emotional set of swings in a series than, oh, man, the first game the Suns win, then the Lakers steal the second one. It's like, oh, my, and Chris Paul gets hurt, and then the Lakers win the third game, and you realize, oh, my gosh, this series is over. Wow, Chris Paul hurt again. Then Chris Paul comes back, and the Suns steal one, and it swings the other way because Anthony Davis gets hurt, and then they get whacked twice. I mean, they get their asses kicked in Phoenix.
Yeah.
Massive swings, and Anthony Davis had to go out in the first quarter. Here is Charles Barkley. Did you find it, Trey? Okay, good. Here's Charles Barkley creating the nickname street clothes for Anthony Davis.
I told you, the Lakers can't win this series. Forget about the championship. They can't win this series without street clothes.
I'm not even... You want to explain that?
I call him Anthony Street Clothes Davis because he's always in street clothes.
You ain't got to explain it, Chuck.
No, I just said what he said.
Dude, I was just trying to distance myself as far as possible.
Okay. Let me know when you hear the lie.
It should be on Basketball Reference right now.
Can you check it?
I don't think it is, but it should be.
It should 100% be on Basketball Reference.
And, of course,
Reference.
Anthony Davis tried to come back, lasted 5 minutes, could not go.
And he ended up in what? And you know what? The only reason he didn't get dressed up in his clothes and go back to the bench is because...
He knew.
He knew.
He stayed in his uniform.
I can't let Charles have a video of me in street clothes.
And Charles had a different approach last night. He was upset with the team doctors for the Lakers for actually letting Anthony
Davis probably play. Took some heat from somebody.
But even still, the nickname, apropos as it is, it is a doctor's job to kind of figure out if Anthony Davis can play or not. And it was clear. Even in the 5 minutes that he was on the floor, he wasn't good.
Name a better nickname that somebody called somebody than street clothes right now. Off the top of your head, can you think of one?
It's recency bias, but right now, I can't think of one. I'm sure I like the more insulting ones like Pandemic P. That's a good one.
That's a good one. My kids even know that one.
That was great.
It's not Playoff P, it's Pandemic.
It hasn't really caught on, and partly it's gone away because Kyle Lowry hadn't won a title, but you know. While the Raptors were struggling with DeRozan and Lowry, their struggles were LeBron based. They just could never get past LeBron. I don't think they had ever, when they got good, after they got good and were a contender, they always lost to LeBron. That was the only guy they lost to. It was the same time that the Warriors were coming up. So the Warriors got the Splash Brother title. DeRozan and Lowry got Trash Brothers.
That's good too.
That's the one I loved.
One that I thought was incredibly disrespectful, Tracy McGrady instead of T-Mac, She-Mac.
That is something you couldn't get away with today.
No, you couldn't.
Didn't Kevin Garnett...
We call that problematic.
Kevin Garnett call Carmelo Honey Nut Cheerios?
Well, that was...
About
do you want to go there? Okay.
That
you know
was
what?
Really
I'll
about...
let you do it. Do you want to say why that nickname came up, Del? I mean...
No, I don't want to.
I know
to.
You know why. Do you know why that nickname was
do
there?
Do you think I should?
Well, you did say bang earlier. I don't know.
Bang's not that... Nah, you could say that on...
Yeah,
I know
you can.
Can
say.
It's
you
just
can
aggressive.
Say, go ahead.
It's just aggressive.
I believe... Go ahead. The genesis of that nickname was because Carmelo's wife according to Kevin Garnett, tasted of Honey Nut Cheerios.
Okay. Yeah, I feel bad. Now that he actually said
why'd
it,
you let
like
him do it?
Yeah, I shouldn't have let him say it now that I think about it. Like, now that I hear it out loud, I'm like, you know what? I probably should have shut that one down. But, Trey, you were accurate. It's not your fault. I let you do it. That was on me. I got to do better.
I got to coach better on that
Gary Kubiak press conference. John, that was on me. I got to do better. I got to do a better job with our punt team. I got to do a better job with allowing Trey to say, tasted like Honey Nut Cheerios. That's on me, John.
Well, you know, Paul George riding for, not Paul George, Paul Pierce riding for his guy said he had a talk with Kevin Garnett. And Kevin Garnett denies ever saying that. Carmelo Anthony would feel otherwise.
Please. Carmelo went after him like, he went after him outside at the team bus, right?
And even Lala denied Garnett ever uttering the remark. Kevin Garnett, in fact, had never said that I taste like Honey Nut Cheerios, she wrote. I tried to figure out how this big lie was turned into a media firestorm. I still can't answer that. Melo,
what does Melo say?
Well, we know how Melo reacted. There are certain things that you don't say to men. Say to another man.
That's
I felt like we crossed the line, but like I said, we both had an understanding right now. We handled it the way we handled it. Nobody needs to know what was said behind closed doors. So there is some discrepancies about what was actually said. But I like the story. I'm sticking with that story.
Yeah. That's not really a nickname like I was talking about, like street clothes. That's more like Kevin Garnett was kind of a habitual line.
You mean
line
the same stepper. Guy who said what he said about Charlie Villanueva because he had the hair
what
thing.
I forgot what he said.
Said something about you look like you're a cancer patient. Or
That was exactly what he said. Dale.
A guy with alopecia.
Alopecia
with he doesn't have body hair at all. And Kevin Garnett dropped a cancer patient on him.
Yeah, that guy.
Yeah, that's called a habitual line crosser, and that also would be problematic.
Cancelable offense.
So Kevin Garnett could not survive today. He's lucky all that stuff happened in the 90s and the early 2000s.
Yep. Somebody said, I just got a text from somebody who said that they met you a few weeks ago walking to a bar, and then you tagged along with them.
Trey did.
Yeah.
I did.
Shout out, Trey.
Oh, I'm trying to remember. Maybe.
What do you drink, Trey? You drink?
Vodka Red Bulls.
You got to stay up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
For the most part.
Vodka Red Bulls. I can see that.
I like how it tastes. Tastes like Honey Nut Cheerios.
Oh, okay. Okay, time to go.
8:46 on bench. I shouldn't have done that.
ESPN 97.5. You are listening to The Bench on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 92.5.
Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's John Granato and Lance Zierlein.
Wow, somebody just sent me what Kevin Garnett said about Eric Gordon, and it wasn't good either. Garnett was...
He's disrespectful.
God, Garnett is over the top. He called him trash ass. But a word that I'm not allowed to say.
I call you trash ass, but I just finished it off with
Lance.
Yeah,
but you don't say that other word.
No, I don't.
Eric can't believe him. We're talking about players who get in your head. It all started because Trae Young. Well, let's play it again, Trey. Trae Young is clearly in the Knicks fans' heads. They eliminated the Knicks last night, 4-2.
Two nights ago.
And last night, Portland was eliminated again in the first round. LeBron James in L.A. was eliminated in the first round by Chris Paul.
Carmelo Anthony made history. He and Terry Porter, of all people, are tied for the most first-round exits in NBA history. Tied at 11.
That feels right for Carmelo, a guy that I feel like is a stat box Hall of Famer.
Terry Porter's got to be like, hey, could you not have done this so people don't remember that I was no one would have thought of Terry Porter. No.
This guy went deep in the playoffs, right? He went to the finals with the Blazers. I would have never thought of Terry Porter being on that list. Carmelo makes sense, but 11 times out in the first round?
That's not good.
No, Trey, that is not good.
It is bad.
Yeah, John Granato's out. If you just heard Trey and all of a sudden you hear, that's not good. That's just Trey, who's producing the show today, and Dell's in here with me. So here's Knicks fans. Trey did a pretty good job of bleeping this out. I wish you could hear it unbleeped.
Go to Twitter for that.
You could really get the sense of how these Knicks fans were operating. But they're maneuvering fairly flagrantly when it came to Trae Young. But that just means Trae Young is rent-free all up in their skull piece. And here is Knicks fans right now losing their mind.
like that. He still looks like s***.
I better not catch Trey and Dykeman. I better not catch Trey and Dykeman.
Now, yo, give me a shot at it.
Go, New York. Go, New York. Go.
You'll be back.
It's Trey Young, valet.
What you say to Trey Young right now?
Tell Trey Young.
Trey Young. Yeah, we outside. Trey Young. Bow, 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 bow.
Yeah, so that's what brought up the whole, you know, when you have such a hate for some for somebody
that you,
some player
that you on in a public forum where you're being filmed suggests that this player looks like your dad's appendage. That player is in your head, guys. Does the player you hate look like your dad's?
Yeah, genitalia.
Yeah,
713-780-3776.
Tell us how you know to make that comparison.
713-780. Immediately, he regretted that.
He looks like my dad's.
Not that I
no,
never,
no, but I never see. I wouldn't know what it looks like.
But
too
still,
late,
Kevin.
Freudian
too late.
Slip. You would call that right? A Freudian slip.
Yeah, Freudian
I don't know
slip.
What that is, but it's a right slip.
Eric said he can't believe that Floyd Mayweather has been left off the list. He said that's a travesty. When I lived in San Antonio, he alone caused racial or created racial tension. A bar we frequented had black folk upstairs rooting for Mayweather. And everyone else rooting for the random Latin boxer he pummeled. All right, so I'm going to ask. This is real talk time, okay? Gather in, children. 713-780-3776 if you want to speak on this. So, Mayweather, when it comes to Mayweather, it's like, is this a... Is it? And the same thing was true with Mike Tyson. I never saw a black guy root against Mike Tyson.
Mm-hmm.
Never in my life did I see it. I was a huge Mike Tyson fan. When Mike Tyson got beat by Buster Douglas, I had a guy named Andre from Tulane. He came to my house so we could watch the dunk contest and Mike Tyson and Buster at the same time. We had like two TVs going. And that's a dunk contest where Kenny Smith was actually in it and bounced the ball between his legs and all that stuff. And when Buster, now we were all shocked that Iron Mike lost. When he got beat by Buster, I thought Andre's life was going to end. He was so devastated. And I'm driving back to the dorms, and I'm like, man, that sucks. He goes, you don't understand. And Andre was kind of wired up. He was, like, when we played ball against Andre, he was always, like, he was the guy who was going to play great defense, but he was always wired real tight. Like, he wasn't as loose as the other guys that play ball together. And he turned to me, he's like, you don't understand. This is the baddest man on the planet. Planet was a black man, and he lost. And I'm like, damn, I was just thinking.
But another black man beat the baddest man on the planet.
I know, but I was just thinking, damn, I know, Tyson guy, I'm a Tyson guy too. But I realized at that time, Andre's on, it's like, it's a different thing with him. It's like a,
yeah.
And so Floyd, and so when Eric says that, you know, that's not unusual that when you see guys who are money team fans, you see like, there's got to be black guys who cheer against Floyd Mayweather, I guess. But I see a lot who are clicked up on Floyd. I don't like Floyd because he's the bad guy, and you either pick if you're for the bad guy or against the bad guy. Like, I don't like Conor McGregor either, but I kind of respect some of what he does. I respect the hell out of Floyd as a boxer. There's impossible not to show him the love that he deserves. But I'm going to be honest. I think I'm for Floyd Mayweather knocking out Logan Paul. I think I want him to do something to Logan Paul. I know Floyd is like 43 right now. I think the Paul brothers are so eminently hateable that even if you don't like Floyd, you almost have to cheer for him to put that YouTube generation in their place.
LeBron's fake hustle ass last night prevented this scenario from happening in basketball. I say that because, you know, they're down by 20 plus and then, oh, look, some energy on the defensive end when it's practically out of reach. Oh, thank you for trying on defense, finally. But it was going to be that same scenario for a lot of people, LeBron and the Lakers versus the Nets.
Yeah.
We have a similar scenario in boxing with the Paul brothers involved with Floyd.
With two guys who have been bad guys.
Yeah.
You know, who are labeled. They like to wear the black hat.
Floyd,
bad guy role.
I mean, Floyd is legitimately out of the arena boxing bad guy, if you believe what you believe about,
well,
if
no,
you believe the reports about him and the allegations. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. No,
he's legitimately a bad person. He has had bad moments in his life. And the polls have had that, and I think one, I don't know which one it is. The New York Times has an expose about one of them being accused of sexual assault. I think it's the one boxing Floyd, I think, as well. So you legitimately have two bad guys fighting each other. You know what? Is there a chance of like a double knockout where no one wins? That's never happened in boxing before, right? Where they both knock each other out at the same time.
Yeah, I've seen it. I've seen it in MMA.
I'm looking for that. I don't wish bodily harm on, but you're in a sport where bodily harm happens, so I don't know. Both get concussed at the same time.
I mean,
I wouldn't mind.
I don't like Floyd because of a lot of what you said. I don't mind him being like a great fighter.
I don't mind.
I like that. I don't mind the showmanship.
I don't mind that either.
I don't know how so many people will cape up for a bad person.
People have a remarkable ability to separate the two. Like, that's just you hear a lot. That's his personal life. That's that man's business. I'll hear quite a bit when guys do stuff that you can't really defend. I don't root for Floyd ever. I'm not going to root for the Paul brothers in this.
No,
I have no interest in doing that either.
If the Paul brothers win, look, we've survived Floyd Mayweather being undefeated and being a great fighter, and that was fine. And I'm the dumbass that actually paid for Conor in the middle of a hurricane, paying pay-per-view money for literally Hurricane, the big one?
Harvey.
Harvey's coming in on us on a Saturday, and I got a DirecTV pay-per-view buy on McGregor and Floyd Mayweather.
I wouldn't have done that.
Yeah, it was a poor choice. So you know what I had to do? I had to get on Periscope and try to find people pointing a phone at a. That's what I ended up doing.
Don't you feel like real low rent when you're involved in that?
I felt high rent. To be honest with you, I felt high rent.
Why you have to depend on some random person pointing a phone at a screen?
Dallas at Texas, Oklahoma. You know what I did? We were walking back from some restaurant to our hotel. And so I watched Khabib versus McGregor on my phone on Periscope also. Somebody had it on there. Dana eventually gets people to pull it down, so you got to be nimble.
Was it an enjoyable experience going through that?
No. I mean, I'm walking on the side of a road watching a fight on a phone above somebody else's phone. Like a phone of a phone.
Don't you feel like you've reached a level where you don't have to be involved in those shenanigans?
I felt like you and Raheel.
I wouldn't even do that.
Finding ways to maneuver into a free pay-per-view.
No, but if someone is running it through their computer, a legit stream, I would do that.
I didn't feel like a baller,
but
if that's what you're asking me.
I'm not going to sit through some guy pointing a phone at a screen and watching it.
Well,
like
you're not committed to the craft.
That's another level.
You're not committed to the craft then. But to put a bow on this, I mean, dude, society cannot survive the Paul brothers and all their minions winning. That we can't survive them beating Tyron Woodley, who Jake Paul is going to fight, and Floyd Mayweather, one an MMA fighter and one an undefeated pro boxer. The world cannot survive the Paul brothers winning those two fights. It can't. It just can't. Or society will crumble.
Woodley better watch it because Jake Paul is promising a boxing clinic.
Is that what he's promising?
He's calling Woodley delusional, and he's promising a boxing
clinic.
Dude,
Woodley is a seriously, like, Floyd knows how to pump up fights. That whole hat snatching thing, like, they have to be careful. As Logan Paul found out, you have to be careful because Floyd's team will wreck you. Tyron Woodley is a real fighter. The trash talk stuff, he better be careful with all the trash talk stuff, except for the fact that they want a payday. Woodley's going to want a payday. He's lost four straight MMA fights. So he's going to, three or four. He's going to want a payday. But you better be careful talking flagrantly and recklessly about Tyron Woodley. Because Tyron will put some hands on you. And unlike Floyd, who's going to catch a much, much bigger check, I can see Woodley just losing his cool and just beating the brakes off of Jake Paul like in a real fight in a locker room somewhere.
We got to go to break. My biggest thing is, you want to be Jake Paul and Logan Paul? And you've got a game you're playing, and it's very lucrative and marketable for you. But I can't imagine being one of their lackeys. Like,
oh, and they have lackeys.
Like, just being a dude who's a hanger-on to them? Those two?
They must make money.
No, I know they exist, and I'm sure those bank accounts get filled. But just on a human level, being one of their one of their minions?
That's got to hurt.
I can't. I couldn't imagine.
It's got to hurt. But they do well.
Yeah.
It's 902 to the bench.
ESPN 97.5.